So, Doctor, I'd like to begin with a look at New Mexico and Texas, the states that we cover here at KRWG Public Media. Give us a sense of per capita funding for public health in these two states and how those compare and how they rank nationally.
Certainly. Thank you, Fred. So, yes, in the report that we released today, which is called The Impact of Chronic Underfunding on America's Public Health System, it looks at federal, state, and local public health spending trends. And in New Mexico specifically, New Mexico's state public health funding was at about $292 million, which was approximately a 3% increase over the past year. Per capita, that means about $35 per capita on public health for state funding. And looking at where that ranks in states, it places New Mexico at seventh. For the state of Texas, the funding, state public health funding, is about $491 million, and that was approximately a little over 7% increase over the previous year. And per capita, that's approximately $22 per capita, and that places the state at approximately 35th with regards to per capita spending on public health.
Okay, interesting information there. And I want to delve a little deeper into some of the key findings and recommendations in this report for our entire nation.
Absolutely. So, again, this report by Trust for America's Health on looking at the funding of America's public health system, where it looks at federal, state, and local public health trends, what the report found is that there's been years of underfunding of public health, and that really makes our country more vulnerable, whether it's to public health emergencies or other crises. And sadly, we're seeing that kind of a situation play out now with the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, some of the key findings in the report is that we found a mixed picture where there were some funding improvements, but there was also evidence that our public health and emergency preparedness systems were dangerously underfunded. We found that more than 20% of states cut their public health funding between 2018 and 2019. We found that over the last decade and a half, as an example, funding for state and local public health emergency preparedness had been cut nearly in a half when you adjust for inflation. But an important point to make is that, you know, the federal government provides about 55% of funding for public health programs at the state and local levels. And so when you see federal cuts that happen, it then has that domino effect to states and local communities, where you then see tough decisions that have to be made at states and in cases where they may reduce their funding, and that has consequences for the nation's health.
And let's talk about consequences. I think so many people were just shocked at some of the shortages of very basic items like personal protection equipment in our nation's hospitals. Give us a sense of how underfunding has led to challenges in our response to COVID-19.
Yes, we have seen this over time, you know, more than a decade, where we've seen really an underfunding of public health and the public health system. Since the recession of 2008 into 2009, for example, more than 56,000 staff positions at local health departments were lost. Now, these are some of the very positions that would be frontline public health staff that would be mobilized to help address the COVID-19 pandemic. We've seen that our data systems in public health haven't been modernized to meet many of these 21st century public health challenges, where we're using more 20th century technologies to try to address a 21st century problem and have systems that need to be more interoperable, systems that have the technologies to be able to do surveillance in a fashion that has greater detection capabilities. We've also seen, for example, with the Hospital Preparedness Program, which is the only source of federal funding for the healthcare delivery system to prepare for and respond to emergencies, that since 2003, that program has lost over 60% of its funding since, as you adjust for inflation. All of these factors are important when you think about the preparedness and readiness of the nation, whether it's for a natural disaster or a disease outbreak or bioterrorism, that investing in these types of systems is critically important to being prepared and effectively responding to the needs of the communities.
Of course, the federal government is providing some supplemental funding packages related to COVID-19. What else needs to be done to address this pandemic?
Absolutely. The emergency supplemental packages that the Congress has passed, these are critical in addressing the immediate crisis needs, especially in this short term, because there are often, even with the day-to-day funding that health departments and other agencies will have for emergencies, there are crises that are such a magnitude that you'll need additional support and funding through emergency funding. What we also are recommending is that there is going to be still and yet increased funding to strengthen the public health infrastructure and workforce. And when we talk about that infrastructure, that is for laboratory capacity and surveillance. That is for ensuring you have the communications modalities to be able to inform and educate the public and do so in a rapid fashion, especially as information is changing. It's to build the community partnerships that are necessary, and you want to do those things certainly prior to an emergency happening, to have trusted relationships in communities that you can activate and mobilize those networks to ensure that you're meeting the needs of diverse communities. And it's also about how we address and ensure that as we move through this pandemic, that we're also safeguarding the nation's health by investing in chronic disease prevention, as well as the prevention of other issues that put Americans' health at risk that may actually make them more susceptible, for example, to the severe complications of an infection like COVID-19.
A final question to follow up on what you just said there. You know, we are now thinking about public health in terms of a pandemic, an emergency. But if you can elaborate a little more to give our listeners better understanding of the importance of public health programs dealing with other issues. You mentioned chronic disease. There are so many things, sexually transmitted diseases, smoking cessation programs. The list goes on and on. I'm not the expert you are, so I want to give you a chance to enlighten folks about the needs. They're so great.
Well, you started an impressive list, Fred, and you're absolutely right. You know, public health is there day in and day out, and often may go unnoticed because they are ones that may be thought of as being behind the scenes, but they are actually promoting and protecting the health of their communities, their residents, the nation each and every day. When it comes to issues like chronic disease prevention, you know, 6 in 10 Americans have a chronic disease, and public health is there doing education and outreach in communities to understand, for example, risk factors for obesity and diabetes. They're designing and implementing childhood vaccination programs, the vaccines that, for example, our kids need in order to go to school. Also working on maternal and child health programs to ensure that children grow up healthy, smoking cessation, as you just described, ensuring that the food that we eat is safe. These are all the various types of things that public health does, and even more on a day-to-day basis. And so ensuring that as a nation, we are actually providing the public health system with the tools, with the infrastructure and the workforce that they need to be able to meet all of these demands, which are growing each and every day, is critically important so that we can continue to be a thriving and prosperous nation.
Thank you so much for being with us today and for the work that you do at the Trust for America's Health.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you for the opportunity.